You're listening to the MoneyWeb SAFM Market Update Podcast.
And as Eskom aims to expand its grid capacity by increasing its transmission capabilities, it seems as though this project or these various projects to expand the grid have hit a bit of a snag, a financial snag, that is, because it seems as though the financing side of it isn't coming to the party. Nobody's willing to lend the money, or everybody's hesitant to lend the money. I'm joined on the line by the head of project management within the presidency of South Africa, that is Rudy Dix, to take a look at the problems that are plaguing Eskom and the energy space at the moment and try and unpack what this means from a leadership point of view, particularly now that we no longer have a Department of Public Enterprises and everything now goes directly into the presidency. Good evening, Rudy. Thanks so much for taking the time. Certainly an interesting time to be involved in project management as we start to see the need for these sorts of projects come about. But from a financing perspective, lenders saying they're very reluctant to loan money to Eskom. Any surprises there?
Hi, Jimmy, and thanks for inviting me on, and thanks also to the listeners. Look, I think there's a general misunderstanding with it. I think that let's just go a little bit backwards, right? Because if you're talking about Eskom having to do the BOLD program for transmission in the same way that it does BOLD programs more recently, the new BOLD program for Kusile and Medupi, and there's an expectation to build out 14,000 kilometers on transmission lines, and certainly in the context of debt moratorium, you may then say, well, there is difficulty for Eskom to go into the markets because there's a debt moratorium. There's no shortage of capital, of course. It depends on how one structures, for example, the ability for us to roll up and to build transmission. And I think that's really the issue that we need to talk about. So as I said before, I think that the National Treasury and government is always obviously willing to look at, particularly in the debt moratorium conditions, to specifically look at where there is a need to expand the transmission network. That's going to be quite critical. We've got a large number of new projects, particularly private investment, up to 22.5 gigawatts of renewable energy. The IPP programs, for example, all of that needs the expansion of the grid. So no shortage of capital. It's how one structures it to be able to ensure that we can build the transmission network. And I think that's really the issue that we need to get around.
We are definitely in agreement there that there's no shortage of capital, Rudy, but it is very clear that, for one, the Minister of Energy and Electricity has said that raising 400 billion rand on the state's balance sheet, the state doesn't have the balance sheet to do that, right? That's the first part of it. The second part of it is donors directly that have just shy of $12 billion have said that they are hesitant to loan money to Eskom without sovereign guarantees that the government cannot provide. So even if there is no shortage of capital, it's very clear that the own goals that have been scored by Eskom in the past are the direct hindrance as to why the lending side of it, the private capital, now says we don't want to loan money to Eskom because we don't know if they can repay it.
Well, think about it differently. I mean, my point that I raised early on, Jimmy, is also the fact that certainly, I think government is willing to look at some degree of discussion on sovereign guarantees on the basis of transmission expansion. And I think that's precisely what the minister had said when he announced the debt moratorium conditions during the course of 2022. I think that's quite important, that there is a distinction that he makes between generation and bill for generation, or the ability to borrow for that, and that versus transmission. And I think that's really where the nub lies. Now, of course, you're absolutely spot on. The international partner groups, for example, that have been working on the Just Energy Transition Partnership with us have made it fairly clear in some instances they do require government guarantees. Now, again, we have to deal with it on a case-by-case basis. So Eskom would have to make a special request to National Treasury based on the debt moratorium conditions, that if they are able to underwrite, funding options that are there, and some of them are quite cheap, they're concessional. But there's other options also, right? So let's go back to that one. So Treasury would have to look at it on a case-by-case basis and said, well, okay, we'll have to consider the applications. We have to consider the applications that are there. If Eskom thinks that they are able to deliver an X amount of lines, kilometers of lines, and the amount, the volume of capital that there is, X, we'd have to either decide on yes or no. But I think certainly that's exactly what the minister has said when he announced the debt moratorium conditions. There are other options also, for example, and this is the other option that I think we're exploring more and more. The minister has been quite a strong proponent of looking at independent transmission options, for example, where you explore concessioning of the network. So build, operate, transfer, for example, very similar to what we've done in the road network or elsewhere. And these are, you know, these generally don't require, for example, government guarantees. They do require, for example, the unbundling of the transmission tariff, for example, or regulatory uncertainty. So certainly, if you do want to get private sector concessioning, for instance, into building out the transmission network, you may have to think about, you're going to have to think about how you structure tariffs and, of course, regulation to be able to ensure that you could do long-term concessioning. That's another option also, Jim.
Rudy, speaking of tariff structuring and looking at the unbundling of Eskom, part of the problem that sits within the Eskom business is the fact that they are now applying for a 36% tariff increase. The amount of gigawatts consumed by South Africans consuming power from Eskom is declining and is forecast to continue declining. And at the same time, municipalities are still owing just shy of 80 billion rand, which, as the minister mentioned, is considered basically not recoverable at this stage. How then does the presidency that now oversees this in part and balance the conversation of saying the tariffs can't be going up consistently in an unsustainable manner, but at the same time, Eskom's not going to recover the revenues it's owed?
Well, certainly you're going to need to do a number of things. For example, the restructuring of Eskom is going to be important, particularly the way that we're doing around the unbundling, the corporatization. Tariffs have to be cost-reflective, and I think that's going to be quite important. So, you know, when one talks about cost-reflection, what is it that goes into making up the tariff? And that's going to be quite critical. And secondly, of course, government's response has to be to protect and shield small businesses and, of course, vulnerable households. That's going to be quite critical that we're going to be more effective. But certainly, I think one of the biggest cost drivers are administrative pricing, right? And we know that. Electricity pricing, for example, water pricing, for example, cost of education, cost of private healthcare are drivers of, impacting on households and generally middle to low income households as well. So we're going to have to think about it very differently in the way that Eskom would have to recover its costs in relation to that. I think the minister has also said particularly that we're going to have to work really hard at ensuring that how do we recover, for example, debt from municipalities. Again, part of the debt moratorium program that National Treasury has introduced, for example, for municipalities and distributors, is a commitment to pay Eskom, and of course, Treasury is able to assist out in ensuring that they could be more sustainable and in recovering, of course, much of the debt that their consumers also owe. It's a difficult question. I don't think there's a fixed hard answer for this, but I think it requires a combination of different interventions to ensure that we do move on a sustainable tariff path, and that's to be cost reflective at the end of the day.
When we look at that tariff path, Rudy, how much of that responsibility sits with Eskom accepting that they cannot continue to increase the charges? I mean, Eskom's said to produce electricity at under 1 rand per kilowatt hour, so roughly 87 cents per kilowatt hour, yet in some places it retails or they sell it onto consumers for almost 4 rand per kilowatt hour. Clearly, this is not sustainable for the consumer. As you rightly mentioned, the consumer is under pressure. So at what point does the conversation then shift to say the charging or the increasing of these tariffs does no longer make sense and something else needs to give?
So remember, I mean, because at this point in time, Eskom still holds a complete monopoly on generation capacity and as it puts in its multi-year price determination for tariff increases, ultimately, it's the regulator that makes the decision, and I think the regulator has to apply its mind. It has to look at evidence. It has to look at the impact on society broadly, the socioeconomic impact that it has on society, and that's both household and businesses. So, you know, Eskom can request that amount, but ultimately, it is the regulator that makes the decision, and I think the regulator has been quite vociferous in ensuring that it does protect consumers, both households and businesses. And I think that's going to be quite critical. Mm. And for me, that's going to be an important part of how we deal with this going forward. Also, Virginia, and I think that for me is going to be an important part of ensuring that the regulator does play an important role in ensuring that we do protect society around potentially onerous costs that are being.
Rudy, speaking of the important roles that are being played, you sit within the presidency that obviously has oversights over a number of projects. And if we have time, I want to look into the water crisis in a moment. But you touched on something quite important around the monopoly that Eskom does hold within the market. As the presidency, as government, as the new government structure, should there not be a policy review as to whether or not the independent power generators or power producers can do more than just generate and transmit, and they should be allowed into all areas that Eskom has been playing in to reduce that monopoly and better the lives of consumers?
Absolutely, Jimmy. I mean, I think that's the reason why, for example, the Electricity Regulatory Act has been introduced. It is, of course, waiting a sanction from the president. But the ERA is one of the more fundamental reform legislations that we've introduced by Operation Vulindlela, which is another project that I co-run with the National Treasury colleagues. And ERA fundamentally is about introducing competition, is about doing the market reform, so that in the generation space, you can have many producers of electricity, you know, that could be sold. Part of that has already been done in terms of separating transmission from generation. You would know by the beginning of this year, we appointed an independent board for the National Transmission Company of South Africa. From the 1st of July this year also, the National Transmission Company was able to trade, became a trading entity. That's quite important. Now, these are all conditions, including many of the conditions, for example, around the responsibility of the NTCSA in the ERA Act, is going to be about introducing that market reform. But make no mistake, it's not going to be an overnight competition in the space, because ultimately what you want with competition is to bring down the cost of tariffs, produce cheap electricity, ensure that there are different players in the market space and that consumers are able to choose. Now, those are important parts of the reform program in introducing competition. But it's not going to be overnight, as I say. It's going to take a bit of time for us to ensure that the market reform does happen. The regulator is going to play a central role. And many of us in government are going to have to institute various policy changes to ensure that we do create market conditions for competition in generation, for instance.
When we look at those policies, Rudy, how effective or how quick is that process to happen? Because a lot of what's been going on in the market, as you said, there's no short of capital in the market. There's no short of willingness from both private sector and whoever else is involved to make these changes. But every single time we have these conversations, it comes down to a regulatory or a policy stumbling block where there's no clear direction on policy, which you mentioned earlier that policy does need to be clearer. Why is government taking so long to clarify the policy if this is a matter of national importance?
No, Jimmy, I think the Electricity Regulatory Act provides a very clear path and direction around how we see the electricity market space. And I think once the president has assented to it, I think it makes it very, very clear as an act exactly what sort of market conditions we want to create, including a future market, right? So that's going to be quite critical for us. I thought that we have taken quite a significant amount of steps in the last few years in creating a high degree of policy certainty in the electricity market space by ERA, for example, separation of the National Transmission Company. Our next focus area will be on the electricity distribution sector. That's important for instance, to ensure that we don't, we continue to invest in an expanding EDI sector. So I think government has done sufficiently enough to be able to provide the kind of policy certainty. Recently, about 2.5 years ago, we introduced private sector investment within generation and significantly changed again the Schedule 2 of the Electricity Regulatory Act. And being able to, not IPPs, I'm just distinguishing between independent power producers through the auction program. I'm talking specifically around private sector generation for own use or for selling off to many customers. And that's quite important. The reforms are there, I think. Certainly what we need to do is carry through, continue to support the markets, continue to support competition, and implement the Electricity Regulator Act as soon as the president has sent it.
Well, we'll wait for the presidency to sign off that particular piece of legislation, and hopefully we can catch up once that has taken place. Thanks so much for the time and for the insights, Rudy. That's Rudy Dix, Head of Project Management within the Presidency of South Africa, on the problems that are plaguing Eskom as it aims to expand the grid and is struggling to find financiers.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb SAFM Market Update podcast, uploaded weekdays at 7 p.m. For more MoneyWeb podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.